Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rise Above 2K. I'm Gex, be your host as we dive into all things 2K as normal. We're joined again, as always, by the talent, the unicorn Big. How are you doing this evening?
I'm fantastic, man. Just draining threes and feeling good.
We've got a lot of threes to talk about, so if you're a fan of Steph Curry like I am, you're going to be right at home today. Just a quick note about Rise Above 2K and what we're all about. We're a community built around hard work and development in NBA 2K26. We're driven through our Discord, which you can find a link to join in the show notes and in the description below. If you want to be part of a community that's just about the hustle and grind and being positive through the process and the cycle of 2K26, this is the spot to be. But let's get right to it, man. It's been an interesting 2 weeks for you. A lot of growth and a lot of fun. What's been the biggest catalyst for change for you? What is something that you're so excited about the game right now?
Well, I think the catalyst was the build, the jump shot creation, and kind of just being in the right headspace where your build is doing what you want it to do in your head. There's still a lot of things I would like to improve, but right now I think those are the biggest things.
Well, that's fantastic. And obviously, a lot of it's driven through shot completion and your three-pointer. So sort of walk me through what's changed with your shot composition and how your three-pointers have changed.
Good. So I touched on this in an earlier episode, but I have a very quick release, almost a snap jump shot. As long as you press up quick, it's going to go in most of the time. So that's the thing. I go into my court and I try to make 10 in a row from all my lethal zones. And that's kind of what I've been doing. When you're playing the game, I'm getting a lot better at knowing how open I am and who I'm going against. So if you're covering me and you're a 6'8", 6'9", I'm typically just going to shoot over you. But even if you're 7'4" and you're not face guarding me, you're giving me just a little bit of space, like typically 60% of the time, I can still make that shot. So even with the patch that happened, it's really about like finding that sweet spot about how open you are and making sure that there's good communication so your teammates know when you're open.
Love that. We talked a little bit last time about the nerf for the 7-4, for the super bigs, as I'll call them. Has that still played into your game at all, or has the nerf really been something that you've been able to work through and still make your game shine?
So I'm working through it, but there are some limitations. I still find myself maybe being a little aggressive when I'm covered. Like if a 6-8 or 6-9 is like jumping on me, I only make that like 25% of the time as opposed to like 50% of the time.
Okay.
You know, because it used to be you can just literally make anything you want all the time unless you have somebody on you that's like 7-1 or taller. So it's just about finding a little bit more of your spots. But I'm definitely working my way through it.
So is it safe to say that that's made you a better all-around player? That you're not like stuck on a shtick, you're actually making moves and being more aware of your presence?
Yes. So my typical thing that I like to do is just like spot in the left corner. And that does, the biggest thing that does is that creates space. So I'm not much of an inside big. So I'm not typically driving to the hoop, looking to post up, trying to make a move to the bucket. I'm going to get them that left-hand corner and just stand there and wait until that center on the other team gets pulled in a little bit, call for the pass, and it's a dunk or it's a three, excuse me. But what I've been doing more often now is moving around the perimeter and finding more open spots to shoot, because typically when I play, the point guard isn't patient enough to run the pick and pop. Because if you can run the pick and pop with a point guard who knows how to do it and is like patient enough to do it, then that totally changes the game because then you're going to be open all the time.
Okay, we're going to get to point guards in a minute because we've got a lot to say about point guards in the modern 2K space. But is this style of sort of hanging out in the left corner, is it rare enough that we can call it a unicorn style of play? Or does that... anyway, regardless of that, I want to talk about the other side of... Yeah. I want to talk about the other side of the nerf, because obviously you have to play defense as well. How has the change for 7-4s and how they're shooting affected how you approach defense when you're on the other end of the court?
So I would say the differences is being 7-4, I don't have to like jump at other 7-4s to, if they know that I'm like pretty close to face guarding them, they won't shoot on me. And if they do, they're going to make it like 15% of the time. So that would probably be the biggest difference. Even the pre-patch, like you would still have to almost jump at guys to stop them from shooting if they're really good at shooting. So that's probably the biggest difference.
I mean, that makes sense. And just for, a peek behind the scenes, for those of you who are listening or watching, we go through a rundown of sort of what we're going to talk about. That was not one of the things we were going to talk about. And just like on the court, the unicorn big's so quick on his feet that he covered it like a 7-4 on defense. let's talk a little bit about the three-pointers. Is how it's really developed into a key part of your game, is this driven more by the function of how you're built, or is it sort of the skills that you've enhanced to go with your build?
I would say it's a combination of both. Okay. After last year, I wanted to be way better with my 3-point. And as I've played this year and went through 3 different builds before I got to this one, I've kind of realized that I needed to take my own advice and really go for what you want. So I can still dunk. I can still play in the paint a little bit. I can still do my fade a little bit. But what I'm realizing, especially after reading, I believe his name is Kurt Goldsberry's book, Sprawball, is that it's more economical to shoot threes than it is to play inside the paint. You're going to help your team out more if you're shooting threes. That's just the way it is. On defense, like if I have to guard the perimeter on the opposing center, I'll do it. If I have to play in the paint, I'll do it. But I've kind of given up on the inside post game because the build is really meant to shoot. And I tried so many different shots. I tried so many different builds. I tried to have more of a balanced build and it just wasn't working. So now I'm just kind of going full throat for the three.
Well, I like where your mind's at. And obviously, Mike Dunleavy from the Golden State Warriors would agree with that, too, that three is worth more than two. And we'll get to the Golden State Warriors later. We've got some talk to do on that. But we talked a little bit earlier about sort of your drive in terms of what you're trying to get done this cycle, some of your goals. And right now you're really flirting with that purple plate line. What is your goal in terms of some of the skill rating things in the short term now and over the rest of the cycle?
Sure. So with these terrible builds, I got myself into a massive loss hole on rec. That's my main game mode.
Sure.
I came out of the gate thinking, I'm going to blast past 500 and never look back. And I was in, by the time I started this build, I think I was at like a 33% win rate, which is very embarrassing and bad. I had a lot of games where I like didn't even take a shot because I was just a useless big man sitting out there trying to do something and I couldn't do much.
Filling some space for sure.
Filling some space. Yeah. So now, I'm like, I've played, I think, let me do the math. I've played 136 or 137 rec games this cycle.
Centric, and, well, let's go.
And I've gotten to 49.2% win rate. So I've gotten myself with this build all the way from 33% to 49.2. which is awesome. In the short term, I would like by the end of this weekend, I would like to be above 500. By the end of the cycle, past 60%. I think if you're, you know, playing with randoms or a squad and you're past 60% in rec, you're pretty good, because at the end of the day, and I know we're going to get into this, you can't control necessarily the skill level of everyone else on your team. So that would be like my short-term goal, would be to be solidly in purple plate, not falling back to gold, which I've been going like purple, couple losses, I'm towards the end of gold, then I'm back into purple. In the next couple weeks, I would like to like start flirting with red.
Okay. Yeah,
and,
I mean...
And
yeah.
I'm going to need some other aspects of my game to mature to get to that point.
Well, we're always here for improving. That's kind of what Rise Above 2K is all about. So we'd love
yes, sir.
Hearing that.
Yes, sir.
And you fortunately or unfortunately reside in Texas, which means you have a large player base that you're up against. People are talking a lot about ranks, and I see a lot of people who are top 100 in Vermont, which I guess isn't whatever. But what are your goals in terms of where you want to be ranked amongst the Texians, even though you're not one, in the game by the end of the 26th cycle?
So, Gax, I was told 2 years after I moved here that I could officially call myself a Texan after I lived here for 5 years.
Okay.
And we're going on year six.
Ah.
So I think I can officially call myself a Texan. I'll probably just get a tattoo soon and then nobody can debate me.
Put it to rest. Yep.
Put it to rest. But I would say feasibly, you know, within the next couple months, I'd like to find myself in the top 1,000 in Texas.
A strong goal. Yeah.
Well, part of it is this. I mean, I think you have players out there who get paid to play or literally just play all the time. I have a job that is unrelated to the game that takes up time. I like to, you know, do other things with my life. Some of these people, I don't think maybe have one.
Well, we talked in a previous podcast about how many hours people had logged just through early release weekend, and it was just absolute insanity. And none of these people have to sit and talk to me for an hour every week. So like, I mean, there's lost time right there, right?
So Cash Out, who was first to legend rep last year and is probably going to be first to legend rep this year, has a shower count from early release. And I think after 2 or 3 weeks, he was at 5.
Boy.
So this dude can't even find 5 to 10 minutes to take a shower.
And he can't like keep his controller dry while he's... the shower daddy
he was
work
at,
or whatever.
He was at 750 games played in the first 3 days. So, like, how is that even possible? I don't know.
Look, we're...
So part of it is time, right? Like, I want to be top 50 in Texas. I don't know if it's necessarily feasible just, like, based on the variables by the end of the cycle. But I really want to figure out how much time you need to put in to be a top-ranked player in Texas. And like you said, it's a big state. There's probably 200,000 players playing in this state that play online competition. So I think getting in the top 1,000, in the last week, I've gone from 26,000th and change to now I'm 21,000th and change.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe I can get to, in the next couple of weeks, get to the top 15,000. You know, yeah, it's one of those things where, rank is cool because it's something that to push towards, because I don't play this game all the time not all the time, like some people Cash Out. But I don't play it all the time to like, plateau. Like the whole reason I started the Discord, the whole reason we're doing the brand is because like plateau sucks, and like that's just a thing with life too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I you kind of jumped into like two or three things that I'm gonna go after here. So we're just
sorry, Gax.
We're gonna plow along. No. I mean you're doing my job for me, which is fantastic. I want to talk really quick because you said that this is a big 2K weekend for you. Like this is kind of like you're honed in for the weekend. You're gonna be grinding away. I want to talk a little bit about mental fatigue and how that can disrupt what we call in the RTS space a ladder session, where you're grinding ranked games to try and push your rating higher. But there are times where you just get mentally fatigued and your performance starts to go down. How do you recognize when that's starting to affect you, and where do you go from there? Do you step away? Do you play a different mode? Like, how does that look for you?
Yax, what the hell is RTS?
The real-time strategy game. StarCraft II is my favorite game. I'm a nerd. Let's move on.
Okay. So last night I was facing this. So my days have kind of been looking like, and my therapist probably wouldn't like me to admit this, but my days
this
have kind of been
this
like...
This is a separate kind of therapy.
Yeah, this is a separate conversation that, you know, I might be having tomorrow. But I wake up around 7:30, and I try to get in a couple rec games before work. And then I spend all of work thinking about the game.
Texting me about the game.
Texting you about the game. recruiting for the server. Like, it's all I can think about. And then I get home, and I'm, like, ready to go. And then I get, like, 4 or 5 hours worth of game time in at night. And last night, I was just really tired. And I was just getting late on a bunch of shots, like, open shots, and just looking like trash, basically, because a lot of games lately in rec, I've been shooting like 80% from three, or I had three straight games I shot 100% from three, so I didn't miss one three for three straight games. And then last night I was closer to like 45% to 60%, which isn't terrible for a big, but when that my job is to shoot threes and some guys are shooting 75% from three, like, that's just not good enough. So I was just noticing that I was just like a tick slow, because my shot is like boom, boom, boom. Like, that's my mechanics of it, right? So when I'm a little slow in the head, I slow that down just a little bit, and I can't figure out why I'm doing it, and then I realize that I'm tired. So
what's the next move? Once you admit, like, I can't compete at this level anymore, like, I gotta unplug, is it just take the dog for a walk, or do you just switch out modes?
So I'll go into my court and do stuff that, like, can't really affect my rating. Skill rating.
Yep.
Maybe I'll do some 3-on-3 scrimmages against AI. But sometimes I just have to just, like, turn on the baseball game, or,
yeah,
you know, maybe go to sleep.
also an option. So I do want to say this, because you mentioned this a little bit earlier about having a life, having a job, all of those things. And another shameless plug for Rise Above 2K. I mean, why else would you have listened this long? It really, a lot of what we're building in our community is people who have real lives and do actual things and don't have endless money and time to just grind away at the game. And I think it's important that, you know, we acknowledge that we're the same way too. And how nice it is to be a part of a group of people who live real lives and still want to get better at the game. I do want to touch on a little bit of the queuing process, because you're talking about sticking in purple play as hard as you can, starting to push for red. We were talking before we started recording about how your queuing habits, you've really enjoyed queuing with randoms lately because you're queuing with people who stay in your range. Can you talk a little bit about that and why that's so important to your increase in rating and your development?
Sure. So I've been doing randoms too, because early in the morning, it's like hard to find people and you can just immediately find a match.
Other than Euros, right?
Yeah. And I don't know. It's just kind of been one of those things where I think that depending on who your point guard is, who the other big is or the other power forward is on the team, you have to kind of change your game. I know how to play with certain people on the server, depending, you know, what their skill level is, what type of style of play they are. But for here, it really forces my game to be versatile. So maybe I'm running the pick and roll a little bit more often or slip screens or whatever. So that is helping round out my game more. That's awesome. What I've been enjoying the most. And then on the other side of it, it can be challenging to play with randoms because mentally, you know, you miss one, your first shot, or you miss two out of your first three shots and people start calling you trash.
Yeah.
And all of those things. And it's like, did you see my shooting percentage? I literally shoot almost 60%. You know, I can shoot. You saw it, right? And so this year, and maybe I can attribute this to some other things that are going on in my life that are really good. This year, I'm just like have such more of like a shield for that. Just like it doesn't affect me as much. Like back when people used to do that, it was like it would tear me down.
Tilt City.
And now it almost like builds me up. Like, I'll show you. I'm not trash. Yep. Like, you watch this. I'm going to go make my next four threes. Like, you watch. And so that's kind of the thing, right? Is like testing my game, my like game style.
Yeah.
And also just testing my like mental strength, because we all know, and the whole reason I started this Discord is people can be toxic.
You want to stay positive, right?
You got to stay positive.
But adversity finds its way even when you're amongst positive people, because when the shots aren't falling, when the passes aren't working, when things are getting blocked, you still will build that negative narrative in your head. So maybe this is one of the best ways to develop some of those coping mechanisms, as well as additional skills with your game, I would think.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and the other benefit of playing with randoms too is when you actually do play with people on the server, which I do fairly often, it's like super fun. Like, it's just like enjoyable. Like, it's like less of a grind and more of like, you know, I can showcase my skills, have fun with the boys. And that's like last night I was playing with some guys on the server and it was just like fun, good time. And when I'm playing with randoms, it's more of like blinders, focus, like, do not miss your shot. Like, do not have somebody call you trash. Like,
well, in the RTS space, we always say that it's best to train with a sparring partner, someone that you know pretty well, you know their style pretty well. But every time you go up against each other, you're challenging one another in different ways. And there is a comfort level in being sort of exposed for some weaknesses and things like that, but knowing it's a catalyst for growth and you're in an environment where it's healthy to do that. And that, obviously, again, plug for our Discord. That's really what our Discord brings to the table, is you're in an environment where the ego is kind of checked. You can be yourself and learn and take some criticism and grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Enough of the game talk. We need to get to the serious, serious topic of the week. We are talking modern dynasties. I'm putting the cutoff at whenever Jordan quit or retired or whatever. We're going to talk about who we think the best modern dynasty super team. I guess we'll go super team. That probably makes more sense. Everyone already probably knows where I'm going to go, but I will let you go first and talk about who you think the best modern super team is and why.
Okay, so I've been thinking about this, and I'm pulled in two different ways.
Okay. I gave you a couple options just as a side. For other people who want to know behind the curtain, there's some good options.
I'm stupid, so I need multiple choice. So if we're talking best, like, superstar teams with a bunch of superstars on it,
Steely Dan,
then we're going to go mid-2010s Golden State Warriors.
Okay.
If we're talking about the best team of this century, then we have to talk about the first dominant team of this century, which was the Kobe and Shaq Lakers.
Okay. Yeah.
Name another team that's won a three-peat this century.
No, I mean, clearly.
And although honestly,
Pat Riley does have it copyrighted. Just as
if you look at their roster, they didn't have anyone else besides Shaq and Kobe who you
Malone
would label
and
as
Payton would like a word.
Malone and Payton were not on a championship team.
Okay.
So that doesn't count. We're talking about 99, 2000,
okay.
2000, 2001, 2001, 2002. Okay. That was the most dominant team of the century. And here's how they did it. They had some of the best supporting characters, like Robert Horry. He was a supporting character on a lot of good teams.
Oh, absolutely.
Rick Fox, he was on all of the Lakers championships teams, right?
Rick Fox.
Ron Harper, who was dominant with Cleveland, hurt his knee, was on the last three-peat of the Bulls and on a few teams of the Lakers, right? So they had like an awesome supporting cast, like the best supporting cast. But if we're talking about the best big three or the best big four, then you have to go with Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson with the mid-2000s Golden State Warriors.
You're not going to hear any arguments from me. You didn't mention Phil Jackson in any of that, which I thought was really interesting.
I've listened to multiple of his books. And
your history with the Bulls and him are long chronicled. So,
well, yes. And you had Phil Jackson, who only won 11 championships in 19 years or whatever it was.
Just a couple.
He's really good.
Couldn't fix the Knicks, but he did everything else.
What's your very thoughtful, insightful take, Gax?
Well, mine is the Golden State Warriors, with Durant, with Steph, and with KD. And Green. Anyone who's talked to me for any modicum of time knows that I believe that Steph is the greatest shooter of all time, and it's honestly not close. And even to this day, he's still doing stuff that, like, you're just like, how is it possible he can just pull up from the logo and it's going to go in? Like, it's insanity. It's a level of execution that's never been seen before. I've probably never seen again, whatever. KD is an all-around world beater. I don't care that he went there to win the title and, like, some people want to scratch it from his resume. He's insane. And Draymond Green's defense is incredible. And it might just be that I love him because he went to State. It doesn't matter. The year before they set the record for regular season wins, I believe, and the next year they added KD. Like, that team's dominance is something that'll always sit with me. And I'm not one of those people who's like, well, but Jordan did it better, or LeBron did it better, or whatever. I just sat and soaked in every game as it happened to just enjoy the brilliance. And it'll sit with me forever. It's incredible what that team does and still does. I mean, now we've got another Curry in the picture, so it's really exciting.
Not to mention that they had Klay Thompson all that time.
The second best shooter in NBA history that
during those
forgotten.
Handful of years, they had Kevin Durant. also had an all-star 20-plus point a game scorer in Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green was in his prime. So what surprises me the most, I thought you were going to go with the LeBron, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, big three in Miami. I'm shocked. I've never been this surprised with anything you've not said in my whole entire 20 plus years of knowing you.
So, yes, that so a lot of people point to the big three in in Boston as the start of the super team era. I really think it started with the Miami, because that big three won one, and then there was not four, not five, not six, not seven, not eight, and dancing on stage and all that hoopla. That really ushered in like the players run the free agency era. And yes, incredible. Two championships out of 4 years. You turn off the AC on them, they can't function. Like, it. There's a lot there. Love the Heat. Love everything about it. But you mentioned Klay. Those four in Golden State is a very special thing that, hey, we're not going to see shooting like that ever again. So that's where it goes. But if you have a favorite that's different than ours or one that agrees with, drop them in the comments below. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have any ideas for what we need to banter about next week, bring those as well. But that's it for this episode of Rise Above 2K. Again, thank you so much, Unicorn Big, for stopping by, giving us your time, and running this with me. I so appreciate it.
Hell yeah, man. We got a long way to go until I'm top 50 in Texas. So it looks like we have a lot of podcast episodes to do until then.
Well, for the 10 or 12 people who are following us, again, if you enjoyed the show, you want to stay ahead of the game, know more about the Unicorn Bigs process, learn more about RTSs with me, be sure to smash the like button, subscribe to the channel. For more content, if there's something you want to hear us talk about, there's a subject you want us to go into, there's someone you want us to interview, drop those in the comments. We will get to work and make something happen. But until then, find us in the Discord. We're there every night chatting. And until then, we'll talk to you next time. Thank you so much.